Scott and Troy from Who Cares About Men's Health. When we did our wrap-up episode from this past season, each one of us shared our three favorite episodes, and this one made my top three. It's Thunder and Get to Know Your Macros Protein.
You know, Scott, this was eye-opening, I think, for all of us, just where Thunder talked about how much protein we think we need and how much we actually need. It made me feel a whole lot better about my protein intake because as a vegetarian, sometimes I feel like I'm not getting enough protein, or you always have people ask, you're a vegetarian, how could you possibly get enough protein? But definitely eye-opening in terms of the amount of protein we need and maybe some of the adverse effects of getting too much protein.
Yep. And also one of the big takeaways for me that changed the way I eat is that plant protein is just as good, if not better, than meat-based protein. So you can learn all about that as Thunder Jalili lays out the case for vegetable-based protein and talks all about the macro protein. We'll have new episodes coming up soon, but in the meantime, enjoy this episode about protein with Thunder Jalili. Protein time. Time to talk about protein.
Do we haunt your dreams, Mitch? Scott's voice and his singing.
Troy, I'm trying to start the show. Can you be quiet, please?
I'm sorry, Scott.
Quiet on the set.
Quiet on the set. Take 10.
Fighting the misconception that men don't care about their health. This is Who Cares About Men's Health, providing information, inspiration, and motivation to engage in your health so you feel better today and in the future. My name is Scott Singpil. I am the manager at thescoperadio.com, and I care about men's health.
And I'm Dr. Troy Madsen. I'm an emergency physician at the University of Utah, and I also care about men's health.
My name is Thunder Jalili. I'm a professor in the Department of Nutrition and Integrative Physiology, and I care about men's health too.
Today, we are going to get to know your macros. The protein edition. So when it comes to nutrition, you hear a lot about macros. Those are your carbohydrates, your protein, and your fat. And each one of them kind of seems to come with some sort of baggage, like carbs are bad, protein is good, fat makes you fat. So Thunder, first want to kick this off with asking you, why do you think men should understand macros? And what is the benefit of understanding the macros that we're putting in our body? Now, I'm a little extreme about it. I'm not talking about extreme. I'm talking about for the regular guy.
And by macros, you're talking protein
carbs, fats.
Fats.
Yes.
So I think it's important to understand macros because I see misconceptions about macronutrients that drive people into funny food behavior. So in other words, like some people who will avoid certain types of vegetables or certain types of fruits because they're concerned about carbohydrates, or some people that go out of their way to eat excessive amounts of animal protein because they're so concerned about getting enough protein. So the macros on their own are not harmful, but having misconceptions can really make you do funny things with your diet that may not give optimal health.
And I have to mirror, that's exactly part of my journey, because I would have these perceptions that I needed to get a lot of protein. So then a lot of my meals would revolve around, you know, 4 or 5 ounces of chicken, eliminating other things, right? Or I would think carbs are bad, so I might not eat rice, which actually is rather healthy for you, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was absolutely doing what you just said. It was kind of skewing my perception of the things that I eat.
Yeah. And I think if you think about, you know, take that to a practical level and you're thinking about, well, I need to get so much protein, so I'm going to make the center of my plate like steak or chicken or something like that. So you may end up consuming a lot of that, and that kind of makes you full, and you really don't have that much room left on your plate for vegetables or for fruits or for beans or for other things that have clear health benefits. And it may not be because you don't want to eat them, but because you've already eaten so much of the meat that you just don't have that much room left. So that's kind of what I see, you know, macronutrient misconceptions leading to.
All right. So today it's protein isn't everything is the title that I decided to come up with, because it seems like everybody, like that's the holy grail, right, of being healthy is eating a lot of protein. I was in a coffee shop the other day and I heard some 75-year-old guy talking about his exercise routine and how he's upping his protein and dropping his carbs. And I'm like, I don't know if that's the best approach. Troy, what's your relationship with protein, by the way?
That's a great question. And it's something that I've focused more on. And the reason is because I'm a vegetarian. And it's a question I get often. You're a vegetarian. How can you possibly get enough protein in your diet? Like, you know, aren't you just like wasting away? And, you know, and so it's something I have focused on. And sometimes I've looked at my diet and I'm probably not getting enough protein just because maybe I'm not getting those vegetable sources of protein that I should be getting. But my relationship is not where I feel like I need excessive amounts, but I'm just trying to maintain And right now I'm trying to be where I'm at least 60 grams a day. And maybe that's too low. I don't know. That's what I'm curious about here.
Yeah, I want to talk about dosage in a second. But first, let's just break it down. What is a protein and what does it do for my body? I know that sounds very basic, but I mean, I would be hard-pressed to really answer that.
I think that's a great question. And it's perfect to start with basics. So a protein is a macronutrient that's composed of amino acids. So amino acids are the building block of all proteins. And one way to think about amino acids is like, you know, we all played with Legos when we were a kid. So when you use individual Legos to make something bigger, like a little car that you played with or a little, you know, house, you know, or something like that. So that's how we think of amino acids, or building blocks to make various proteins. So what we do with them is we eat proteins from either plant or animal sources, and we digest those proteins to liberate the individual amino acids, and then we send those to the cells of our body, and we use those amino acids to build stuff that we need. And so what are the things we make out of proteins? We make connective tissue out of protein. We make muscle out of protein. We make enzymes and hormones out of protein. We make antibodies out of protein. So that gives you kind of a good general overview of all the things we do out of amino acids.
Can the body produce all these amino acids on its own, or do you have to get all of them from food sources?
We can make 11 of them, and there's 9 of them we can't. So that's the whole reason why we have a protein requirement, is to get those 9 amino acids, and those are labeled as essential amino acids.
So when you hear essential amino acids, those are the ones you can only get from food.
Yeah.
So you need to be sure you're incorporating those in your diet.
In general, this essential term, anytime you hear that in nutrition, that means that you need it and you can't make it.
As in life, when it's essential. So back to Dr. Madsen's question here, how much protein does a person really need, and are we getting enough or are we getting too much?
Yeah, great question again, and that's really dependent on the individual. And why don't we pick on Troy and use him as an example?
Please, that's what I'm here for.
Troy, how much do you weigh? You get to share it with all the listeners.
So Scott, do you know how much I weigh?
Well, no, I was going to jump
in. I know the answer.
Scott knows.
I know.
He's 157.
155. How did you know that? We talked about this.
Yeah, I used to work at a carnival. You know, the guy that would guess weights.
So old am I?
That was another.
When's his birthday?
That was another guy's game.
No, that was another guy. You're good at the weight.
Yeah, I was.
You're
good
pretty
at the
good.
Weight.
Yeah, I stay right about 155.
Okay.
So when you ask this question, is it amount that you weigh or amount of lean tissue that you have?
Yeah, it's a loaded question. For if you have a healthy body weight, you go with the amount that the person weighs. If the person is very overweight, then we may have to consider, you know, a different calculation.
All right.
But since Troy is in great shape and he's lean, we're going to go with his body weight of 155. And we need to do a little bit of math. We'd have to convert his body weight into kilograms. So we got to divide 155 by 2.2. Mm. And while you're doing
math, Scott.
Troy, I'm going to ask you, how would you characterize your activity level? Do you think you're somewhat, you know, normal activity, kind of borderline sedentary, or do you make an effort to exercise and be active on a daily basis?
I exercise and I'm active.
Okay. So for someone who exercises, not like an elite level athlete, but they exercise, say, you know, 5 days a week and they're semi-active, then we'd probably think that they're going to need 1 to 1.2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight.
Okay.
So once we get his weight in kilograms,
so
which we have is 70,
a little bit low.
We would just multiply it by, you know, say 1, and that would give you 70 grams. If you want to have a range, like on your sedentary days, maybe you would need 0.8 times 70, which is 56 grams. I do my math right. Or on an active day, you'd do 1.2 times 70, And what does that come out? 84?
So 84.
Oh, that's super low.
So that's your range. And, you know,
that's all you need.
It's always like that. Most people need less protein than they actually think.
Because I think I've calculated, I did the Zone diet a long time ago, and I've calculated kind of based on their formula, which is your lean body mass times a certain multiplier. And I think I end up around 115, 120 grams a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
According to what they say.
That's actually pretty high. So if I have, you know, like a university student who, you know, plays tennis or is on a ski team or is a basketball player, you know, on like the University of Utah team, and they're always working out and they're very active, you know, maybe I would put them at around 1.5 or 1.7 grams of protein per kilogram body weight, and you'd come up with a, you know, level like was recommended for you, Scott. But for us, as, you know, regular guys who exercise and recreate for fun, you know, we just don't need that much.
Hmm.
even that 1.5 only puts Troy at 105 grams.
Correct.
So still nowhere near the number that I thought I needed to get.
Yeah.
That changes a lot in my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've been considering going to more of a plant-based diet, and my main hesitation was because I didn't think I'd be able to get the protein I needed.
Right.
As a result, I eat tuna and chicken breast but wow.
That's always been the concern for me. And the biggest question I get when someone finds out I'm a vegetarian is like, well, how do you get enough protein? Yeah. It's clear we don't need that much. Like you said, you just figure weight in kilos, multiply it. Well, I mean, that's the answer.
Yeah. You don't,
maybe
you
increase
don't
it by
much.
10 to 15 if you're a little more active.
And can we just take it one easy step further? Let's say Troy needs 60 grams a day. If he's going to eat three meals in a day, that's 20 grams per meal. That's really not that much. If I have, a glass of soy milk, and my glass of soy milk would be more than 8 ounces, I'm probably getting, 8 or 9 grams just in that one glass of soy milk. And if all I'm shooting for is 20 or so grams of protein in a meal, it's not as hard as you think, because everything has protein.
But thunder. It could be a new segment where I go,
but thunder.
Certainly, if some protein is good,
more is better.
More is going to be so much better, right?
That is how it works, isn't it?
What do you think you do with extra protein? What happens if Troy is going to eat 100 grams of protein? What would happen to that extra protein that he doesn't need for normal protein synthesis and normal protein turnover?
It would go straight to his pecs.
it would go first to the pecs, then to the biceps. So that protein, those amino acids could be used for energy. Okay. But what if you have other things you're getting energy from, like fat and carbohydrates? What could happen to those proteins? Well, the proteins can actually be chemically modified. They can be metabolized and they can be turned into fat.
So more protein makes you fat.
It could, if you're eating more than your calorie
needs
and it's coming from protein, yeah, it can be fat, because there's metabolic pathways to take the nitrogen out of amino acids, to use those carbon skeletons for other stuff, including making other compounds. Now, of course, we use amino acids to make neurotransmitters and some other stuff, but if we're talking about really consuming a large excess, it can be used as energy and it can be used, for other things that you may not want it to be used for.
But thunder. How do people on the paleo diet lose so much weight then? Because they're eating all protein.
Usually people on paleo diet don't actually eat that many calories. So it's pretty simple. On paleo, it's not totally ketogenic. I mean,
okay.
A classic ketogenic diet has extremely low amounts of carbs. I think like less than 40 or 50 grams of carbs. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact amount, but it's a very, very low amount. And the paleo diet has more carbohydrate than that.
Okay. So maybe not so ketogenic as like a classic keto diet.
Yeah, but it's still somewhat ketogenic. I mean, really any kind of low carbohydrate diet will drive, some weight loss, because now fat becomes a more important part of what the person's eating. And then I guess we're getting a little sidetracked, but also there's different effects with insulin. You don't have a lot of insulin release, and that could be a segment for a whole nother show.
Oh, for sure. But just to reiterate, even if I'm super active, you're talking like you're super athletes, high performing athletes, even in those cases, someone like myself with my weight, even in those cases, it's only like up to 105 grams of protein a day that you're recommending. That's all you need.
Or if you're a triathlete, 70 kilograms, you're a triathlete, so you're training like crazy, maybe you need 2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. It's 140 grams of protein.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And that's even questionable. Yeah. I mean, and that's, again, you look at the amount in most meat products. If you're eating a lot of meat, you're probably well over that every day.
Yeah. Yeah. We love protein.
Want to get to, are there some protein sources that are better than others? But first, I want to have producer Mitch step in. We were talking about the number of grams of protein we're eating. At one point, Mitch, this is what happens when you go onto the internet and you decide you want to be all ripped. You end up eating 200 grams of protein a day.
That's fantastic.
200 grams a day.
That's heroic. What was that like?
Hi, I'm Mitch, and apparently I don't know how to care about my health.
So, it's all right, Mitch.
So last summer we were going to be, me and my partner were going to be on camera on a documentary, and we're like, we better get tight, we better put some muscle on. And one of the calculations that we found online, it stuck me around 1.8 to 2 grams per pound, not per lean pound. Body mass. Yeah. And wow. So I was at over 200 grams of protein a day. I was trying to get with as low a carbohydrates as possible. And that was...
Wow.
And how'd you feel?
Miserable every day. I mean, you wake up and it's like, I need to eat 6 eggs this morning, or I need to eat 2 giant, you know, I need to eat 3 or 4 giant hunks of chicken breast 3 or 4 times a day.
You're literally choking that down.
Yeah. And protein shakes too. Yeah. Your body is just like, I can't swallow this anymore. And there were protein shakes I was trying to do, and it was just...
How was your energy?
I was pretty tired. Just I was wearing out. I mean, and we were trying to do doubles and work out as hard as we could. And again, and this is starting from zero too, I understand. But we went online, and there are all these people on Reddit that, you know, they're posting their pictures, and these dudes just get yoked in like 6 months, and all it took was caring about their macros. And so anyway.
So that's a huge amount. So you were almost at 4 times the recommended amount of protein. If you were at 1.8 to 2 per pound.
Yeah.
So
doubling what you really should have been eating.
Yeah. Mitch comes into your office and tells you that. What do you tell him?
Well, I'll tell him he can be happier and save some money if he cuts his protein in half. And I don't really see any downside.
All right. Yeah. Are there sources that are better than others when it comes to protein consumption? And let's talk about, you know, somebody that does eat some meat and then also a all plant-based diet.
Yeah. Yeah. So great question. In terms of healthier protein, generally staying away from meat, from animal flesh, is healthier in terms of reducing your risk for chronic disease. So, and there's been, you know, a lot of studies that have epidemiology studies that have looked at this and found some associations between, you know, the more vegetarian or vegan the diet is, the lower the risk of, you know, name your chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, and so forth. Now, having said that, not everybody wants to be a vegan and not everyone wants to be a vegetarian. So what if, you know, you want to eat animal sources of protein? That's okay. I guess that's fine. There's still plant sources end up being a bit more healthy, because not only are you getting the amino acids you need, you're also getting some bonus material you're not getting in like a steak. So for example, if I have lentils, I'm getting protein in the lentils, but now I'm getting phytochemicals in those lentils that could help with some of my antioxidant defense and maybe reduce my risk of certain chronic diseases. I would be getting fiber in those lentils, which would lower my cholesterol, and that would, you know, reduce my risk of heart disease. I'd be getting, you know, some vitamins in the lentils that maybe aren't present in a steak or in chicken. So from that standpoint, you know, plant sources of protein have bonus material, whereas animal sources don't. The big difference between plant and animal sources, I guess, would be in terms of amino acids, is animal sources are more concentrated there than plants. So that just means you have to eat a bit more of the plant food source than the animal food source to get the same amount of protein.
And if someone's saying here, okay, yeah, I am eating a lot of meat, I want to convert more to plant-based sources, what are the highest sources of protein? You mentioned lentils. Anything else you'd recommend?
Yeah, you know, anything in the legume family. So we talked about lentils, black beans, pinto beans, garbanzo beans, soybeans, anything in that bean family is a good source of protein. There are grains like quinoa that are a good source of protein. Oatmeal has protein. So those are all, you know, good ones. And right now, because of, I think, this, you know, kind of revolution in plant-based protein that's happened over the last couple of years, and also the commercialization of it, we're lucky because we have all these alternative plant sources of protein, like Beyond Burgers or Impossible Burgers that probably everyone's heard about. You know, these are great protein sources that don't come from animals and have some of those other beneficial, you know, bonus factors that we talked about.
I've heard some people kind of talk down soy protein. Is anything bad about soy protein? Is it something you recommend as a source?
Yeah, I'm not sure why people talk down soy protein, because I don't really see what there is in soy that could be potentially harmful. And I think, you know, maybe some of the bad rap of soy came from like research on isolated isoflavones, which are a component of soy that, you know, some people are not too keen on, but soy as an intact food, I think, is fine.
I heard that if I get soy protein, I'm going to all of a sudden like Gilmore Girls.
Oh, okay.
Like it can produce estrogen. It can.
Yes, you'll turn into a girl.
Yeah, well, not quite that.
And then
that.
We'll have to change the podcast. Wow.
Yeah. You talked about it going to your pecs. There you go.
No, seriously, I've heard that eating soy products as a source of protein, if you're a man, makes your body produce more estrogen. Is that true?
I don't think that's true. So soy does have phytoestrogens in them, but uh-huh. those phytoestrogens don't, I don't believe they react with the type of estrogen receptor that actual estrogen reacts with.
Okay.
And nuts, I mean, you talked about legumes, obviously kind of nuts are right there too. I assume all sorts of nuts are good. Any one nut that you'd recommend over another? Do you like peanuts?
How about almonds?
I like peanuts.
All nuts are good,
you
guys.
I like peanuts. I eat peanuts.
I think the warning though is, so some nuts are a lot more fat than they are protein. Some have
I don't think that matters.
Combination. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the fat from a nut is irrelevant. So all nuts are good. You know, it doesn't matter if they're raw, if they're roasted. They've all been shown to have health benefits. So, yeah, good thing to add into your diet. Yeah.
I've also heard just plant-based protein in general isn't as good as meat protein. Is that just another one of those things that people say because it makes them seem more manly than when they're eating a steak?
Yeah, it's all the same. An essential amino acid is the same, whether it's found in an animal source or a plant source. It's the same thing. All we're talking about is dosage, if you want to think about in those terms. And there's the concentration maybe is a little less in the plant than in animals. Doesn't mean it's not there. It just means it's a little less. So now you have to eat a bit more of that plant.
And your body processes plant-based proteins exactly the same way as animal-based.
Yeah. Once you get the amino acid out of that plant, chemically, it's the same thing that's in the animal. So you're going to do the same thing you would do with amino acids from either source.
Yeah, because I have seen there's some stuff out on the internet that says that plant-based proteins aren't as good. So we've put that one to rest.
Yeah, I think that whole criticism just comes from the concentration of essential amino acids, that it's lower in not all, but a lot of the plant-based foods, it's lower. But don't confuse lower to mean non-existent. It's there, you just have to eat it. You know, whereas it's really easy to eat meat. I eat 3 ounces of chicken and I get like a lot of protein. I get all the amino acids. Maybe I have to eat more lentils or more beans to get that same thing or more oatmeal, but it's still there and it's still the same thing.
So the macros, get to know your macros. Protein isn't everything. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. The take-home message, the healthy guy rule of thumb for eating protein. You convert your pounds into kilograms if you're a normal weight and you multiply that by 0.8 to 1.
Yeah.
And that's how many grams of protein, which could probably be a lot less than what you're already eating.
Yes.
If you're an elite athlete, maybe 1.5, but I would imagine
1.5 to 2, I would say.
Yeah, that's less than 1% of the population.
Yeah. So, that's not many people.
Yeah.
That's, you know, people who are playing football for the University of Utah, some of them are going to go into that category, but that's not us sitting around this table.
Plant-based protein is a better source of protein because you get all those other goodies in there, those vitamins and minerals and
phytochemicals and fiber. And yes.
So I think we learned protein's good, but it's not everything. There are better ways to get it and we don't need as much as we think.
And the real interesting thing for me was what happens with the excess protein. You don't just pee it out. It might be converted to fats. So clearly some downside. More is not necessarily better.
Thunder, thank you very much for being on the show and talking about protein. And thank you for caring about men's health.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to be on.
Paging Dr. Troy Madsen to Scope Studio for ER or not.
ER or not, it's where we give you an emergency room scenario. You determine whether or not you think it's something you should go to the ER for or not, and then Dr. Troy Madsen will give us the answer. Find out how good of an ER doc you could be. Today's ER or not, bit by a dog. I mean, whatever the scenario, right? Could be your dog, could be somebody else's dog, but you get bit by a dog. Is that a reason to go to the ER or not?
And so this is one of those things where it really depends on exactly that scenario. If it's your dog, then the big question is, okay, is this a laceration that needs to be repaired? Are you concerned about other issues like tendon injuries where things just aren't moving well on your hand or your wrist? Absolutely. Then you need to go to the ER. The other thing we worry about is infection. But that's not necessarily something you need to rush to the ER for. You can go to an urgent care. Typically, dog bites, we are going to put you on an antibiotic. So I would say at a minimum, go to an urgent care. But the bigger question with dog bites is rabies. And that's the number one thing we worry about. So if you don't know the dog, if it was just some random dog on the street, ran up to you, bit you, ran off, can't find the dog, that's the time you need to go to the ER. And there you need to start getting the rabies shots. It's a series of 4 shots. We started in the ER. We give some additional medication to prevent rabies. You're going to come back on day 3, day 7, and then a week later. So the answer is, yeah, go to an urgent care at a minimum. Probably the ER if you don't know anything about the dog and there's any concern for rabies.
How do you recognize if an infection is becoming an issue from a dog bite? What does that look like?
Well, you know, typically there it's going to be at least usually 24 hours after the bite, maybe 48 hours. You're going to start to see some redness around the room, around the wound.
Okay.
You may start to see some pus draining from the wound. It starts to get very warm. You know, as a wound heals, it's always going to get kind of red, maybe a little bit warm, but this is a lot more than what you would expect. And again, ideally after a dog bite, if it's a good dog bite, just get on the antibiotics to prevent the infection.
All right.
So you just want to get it early, prevent that infection from happening.
And then one last question. I've heard rabies shots are incredibly painful. They give them to you in the stomach.
Not true.
Okay.
And that's something I remember hearing as a kid too. And I was scared to death of ever having to have a rabies shot. It's not. It's very simple. The hardest part of the rabies series, if you get bitten, is we do have to inject some medication around the bite. It's called rabies immune globulin. That prevents anything from spreading if there were anything there. So that's kind of the hard part. But the rabies shots themselves are like any other shot. It's nothing in your stomach. It's not some weird thing like that.
Dog bite, your dog, go to an urgent care, get those antibiotics. If it's a substantial dog bite, if it's a dog you don't know, then you need to go to the ER and go through the rabies routine.
Exactly.
Just going to leave this here. It might have something to do with health. It might have something to do with our life. It could also be completely random. Just going to leave this here. I went for a dog walk the other day and I forgot my cell phone. And I was about two blocks away from my house and you would not believe, I did not believe, the panic that ensued.
You got lost. Let me guess. You needed your Google Maps and you got lost.
Walking through my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, do I go back and get it? What happens if something happens and I need to be in communication with somebody?
What if I need to call an Uber to get home?
There was a time in my life where walking without a device in my pocket, a phone in my pocket, was totally normal. And I didn't think twice about it. But I was almost in a literal form of panic. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to prove this to myself that I can do this. And I just kept on walking. And guess what?
Smartphones are just the perfect example of, I think it was Henry Ford who said, the success of capitalism is taking a luxury item and making it a necessity.
Mm.
There you go.
Yeah.
15 years ago, you couldn't have cared less if you had your smartphone.
I felt, what if I need to listen to a podcast?
Yeah. what if in this 15 minutes I'm walking?
Yeah. Believe it or not, I made it home and I was perfectly
fine.
You
survived.
I survived.
You made it through.
I don't know what I would have done if I would have twisted my ankle.
Yeah.
What
would have happened?
Have called for help.
Well, I'm just going to leave this here. This is a follow-up, Scott, to a previous, just going to leave this here. When I said, the ideal thing would be if we could make it normal to wear exercise clothes to work. And you accuse me of wanting to wear yoga pants to work. Well, I'm not wearing yoga pants, but I'm wearing stuff I can go run in right now. And I have run in this. This is my new thing. I've got these pants on and they're stretchy enough. You know, they get by at work and they look reasonable to wear in the ER. Underneath my shirt here, I have a running shirt on. I have my running shoes on. And after shifts, sometimes I will just go out and run. And I love it. But I, you know, my thought was if we can make exercise more just part of our routine and it's not a big deal, like I have to go find a bathroom somewhere and take 15, 20 minutes and change. This is what I've been doing after shifts. After I get off from the ER, it's a great stress reliever. I'll just go out and run on the shoreline trail here.
Yep. And make it as easy as possible to
make
integrate exercise in your life.
Yeah,
and for
just
you,
go do it.
It's worked. All right.
It worked.
Time to say the things that people say at the end of podcasts because
we are at the end of the podcast.
You can interact with us if you go to Facebook.com/WhoCaresMen'sHealth. You could also email us at hello@thescoperadio.com.
And subscribe to us anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also check out our website, Who Cares? Did you say that already?
I did.
Oh, I'm just not keeping up on this one. So,
but what I didn't say is we would love to hear from you if you have any ideas of topics that you would like to hear about, any questions that you have for future episodes. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Or a story that you would like to share that you think would make a difference in another person's life as far as their health is concerned. Thank you for listening and thank you for caring about men's health.